Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Although today I'm going to do something special because I've been doing this thing where I read and review every single science fiction book that has won the Hugo and Nebula Award, which I kind of dubbed the Hugo Award, and I've got down to my final book. Previously I had two left and I started and didn't finish Michael Chabon's Yiddish Policeman's Union, but I had this other one, which is called Blackout, All Clear by Connie Willis, which is a follow-up two novels to a book called The Doomsday Book, which I read and part of, tried to do it twice, didn't finish it, and it became the single lowest rated book that I've ever reviewed on the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast with 0.1 stars or 0.0001 stars. But the way that I do ratings, if I give something 0 stars, it comes off as unrated in my little rating programmy thing that spits out web pages. So I rated it as low as possible and it was awful, but the whole point is that I thought I had to give it a go and I'd review every book, try read every book. So here we go. The Doomsday Book is followed up years later by Blackout and All Clear. Blackout, All Clear is actually one story split across into two novels because the publishing company knows us readers too well, and it's like, oh, we'll split this book into two novels and we'll charge them twice as much money. And guess what? That's what we do. If we're a fan of an author, we buy both novels and read both of them. And that's what happened here. I'm not a fan of this, but, you know, there are other authors who I will totally read a novel split into two, no problem at all. So anyway, like I say, it's a follow-up of Doomsday Book. It's got some of the same characters in. And to be honest, I didn't read more than the first chapter. Actually, I read the first chapter and then 3 lines of the second chapter. I just downloaded the Kindle sample, ebook sample, and read the first chapter. And it was everything that I hated about Doomsday Book, and so I thought I would just review just that first chapter. So going through my notes here, it starts off with Colin. Don't know who Colin is, and you kind of work out who he is, and it's like, oh, he was in the previous book, and you think, well, that's great, but so this book immediately assumes that you know all the characters already. It's like, and there's Mr. Dunworthy. Who's Mr. Dunworthy? I kind of know who Mr. Dunworthy is from the previous book, but it's weird. There's kind of like starting a book in media res and just going, and now here we go, and now here's some action, and you go, okay, that's great. This action is tiding me over. I don't know exactly what's going on, but the action is good enough, and I'm interested, and someone wants something, and I don't know who they are, and I don't know what the broader plot is, but I want them to succeed in this thing that they're going for, that they're aiming for. That can work, but if you just leave that idea out and leave out all the basic information that you need to know who somebody is or what they want or what's going on at all, I don't know, like, this is the start of a massive novel, a massive, massive, big chunky book. Check this out, pages. Blackout, 512 pages, which is a chunky novel. All Clear, 656 pages, longer than the first one by like 140 something pages. I mean, you this is a big thing that you're getting into. You kind of got to like establish that you kind of got to establish trust in storytelling right here in the first chapter, otherwise people aren't going to read on past the Kindle sample. So as I was saying, you know, in media res works when you can immediately see what the stakes are, what's important, what do people want. But the main drama in this is Colin, who's this kid, wanting to find Mr. Dunworthy. So Mr. Dunworthy is someone important and Colin wants to find him. Why? Not really said, that's just left out, but we read Colin and he goes and asks the doorman, "Doorman, where is Mr. Dunworthy?" The doorman doesn't know. Goes through to the secretary, "Secretary, where is Mr. Dunworthy?" And then he has this battle against this, you know, bureaucratic pigheadedness of this secretary saying, "Oh, well, you want to meet Mr. Dunworthy? Well, he's got a meeting next week. I'll put you in next week." And he's like, "Why do you want to meet him? It's important. What's important?" He doesn't say what's important. He just doesn't say anything. He's just like, "Oh, I'll just go find him." Then he goes across to a lab and he meets these two people in a lab and he has a conversation. Them, "Where's Mr. Dunworthy?" And then finally he goes this way up these stairs into a wardrobe department. He's like, "Mr. Dunworthy, here you are." And I'm like, why did that take 5 pages? Why did that take 7 pages or however long it was to get to the point where he did so? And then he has this conversation. He's like, "Mr. Dunworthy, you must have sent me back in time." And he's like, "Well, you're just a 17-year-old kid." And you're like, "Wait, what? This is a 17-year-old kid and he thinks he's going to be a time travel person? And he's like, well, why do you want to do it? And he just says stuff like the worst excuses ever. He obviously knows that he's trying to trick... No, Mr. Dunworthy obviously knows that he's being tricked by this kid, but doesn't just say, hey, look, this must be something important. And you've been clever in the past. You helped out in the Doomsday book and saved Kivrin at the end. This is explained to us in this book. And it's like, well, you're obviously important, but why don't you just tell me what's important? Never does. So we never find out what's important. We get this false... sense of suspense by somebody knowing exactly what's happening or why they need to do something, but just withholding it from the reader. But it's not like we don't see inside this kid's mind, because we get, where could Mr. Dunworthy be? I really need to see Mr. Dunworthy. Why is this Mr. Dunworthy? Where is Mr. Dunworthy? I need to meet Mr. Dunworthy. Why? Because, well, I won't tell that to the thing. But everything else that's going through in his brain about how difficult it is to find somebody in a university, we get all of that, but not why he needs to do it. And then the drama is increased by Colin not telling Mr. Dunworthy either. So drama increased falsely, and it didn't need to be any drama. He could just say, Mr. Dunworthy, this person is trouble. I need to go back in time for this reason. And if he'd have said that, no drama, but also no story. So it's just this fake story. And then there's also this Chekhov's time travel theory where it's sort of like someone's, hey, what do you think about this technician or this scientist who has this other theory of time travel? That time travel could go wrong. Well, I don't think it's true. I don't think it's true either. Well, let's do this. Okay, let's carry on with the story. And I'm like, wow, in the first chapter. So I reckon time travel stuff is going to go wrong later on in this story, and it's going to be about this theory, and everyone is going to be surprised in the book. All the characters are being surprised in the book except me, the reader, because it's so obvious. And yeah, and so you've got kids trying to go back in time and stuff like that. You're just like, oh, kill me. And then I thought, well, okay, that's stuff that's happening. Oh, by the way, all of that didn't happen in the modern day. It didn't happen in 1970s, even though it reads very much like it happened in the 1970s or 1920s by, oh, it's Mr. Dunworthy and Mr. That. Everyone's Mr. This and Mr. That and this. And it just reads awfully, like just awful. But it's all happening, like... 50 years in the future. It's all happened. Well, this was written in 2010, or it won the 2010 Nebula and Hugo Awards. But it's actually set in, let me just look it up here. It's set in, 2060. And in 2060, the most difficult thing that someone can ever do, that the problem that they start off the book is trying to find out where somebody is. And you're just like, why don't you just call them on the phone? Why don't you just send them a text message? Like, that's on today's technology. You'd think in another 50 years, being able to track somebody down and asking them a question would be a lot easier. But it feels like everything is happening in the past, and yet it's set so far in the future. I wish it was just set in 1970. And that's all the stupid problems that happened in the previous book, in the Doomsday book, could kind of work, like with people not knowing where people are and not being able to, and sending letters and making phone calls. All of that kind of feels very much like the 1970s or 1980s. Certainly not the late 90s, certainly not 2000, certainly not 50 years in the future. So I started chapter 2, and I'm going to read out this first part. It says, Warwickshire, December 1939. When Eileen reached the station in Blackbury, the train wasn't there. Oh, don't let it have gone already, Eileen thought, leaning over the edge of the platform to look down the tracks. But there was no sign of it in either direction. Where is it? Theodore asked. I want to go home. I know you do, Eileen thought, turning to look at the little boy. You've told me so every 15 seconds since I arrived at the manor. The train's not here yet. And so we start off this second one. We've got time travel. Someone's gone back in time to 1939. All the amazing stuff that can happen in December 1939. You've got, like, the start of the Second World War. Everything that's going there, you know, all the massive world-changing news. Hitler's still there. There's going to be, like, a Dunkirk invasion. Or not invasion, you know, rescue and all of that kind of thing that you could start off. And what is the main drama? The train's not here, and a young kid is telling you every 15 seconds that they, you know, I want to go home. And I know that the entire book is me going to be reading every few paragraphs, I want to go home. You know why? Because that's what we got in the Doomsday book. I want to go home. Yeah, you told me this every 15 seconds. You want to go home. Yep. 15 seconds later, I want to go home. Yeah, it's every 15 seconds you're going to tell, I want to go home. Will it ever come? I don't know. Let's go and ask the station manager. Oh, he'll know. Oh, I want to go home. No. And I just know that the whole book's like that because that's what the Doomsday book was. It's like everything wrong with this book is wrapped up in these first three sentences or first three paragraphs here of the second chapter. Moving on to the thing that I actually did enjoy about this book is that I read a review on Goodreads. So go to goodreads.com. And go to the blackout book page Blackout by Connie Willis. You'll be able to find it there. The top review, the highest rated review, with like maybe two, how many comments has this review got? 279 comments, 279 likes. The most liked review is somebody kind of doing that. It's a guy called Kemper. And he says, warning, this review will be lengthy due to pure hatred. And that is a really, really funny review. It's really, really great. And it wraps up. He obviously got to the end of this book and wrapped up all of the problems with it. And I'll just do a little extract, a little reading from the end of this. It goes, this is from Kemp's Goodreads review. And he talks about somebody going back in time and meeting the protagonist from the story during the Second World War. He says, let me see. I've got this straight. You're all historians from 2060 at Oxford who work for a guy named Dunworthy who is supposedly very strict about your safety, yet he did a last-minute change of schedule, no explanation, that left people going to England in 1940 unprepared and ill-equipped for the assignment. You were stupid enough to come anyhow, and you're all seemingly incapable of dealing with anything as mundane as unruly children or overbearing people. Plus, the simplest task, like obtaining a black shirt or a newspaper, turns into a major undertaking for you. Even outwitting a senile boat captain or a gardener was beyond your abilities. Now something has gone wrong, and your only plan is to sit around whining about your retrieval teams. Is that it? Is that about it? I said. And then he finished off with the review. He says, when I'm on my deathbed, I'll be cursing the name of Connie Willis for writing this piece of shit and tricking me into wasting precious hours of my life. And that's the kind of review which makes me think I'm just going to read the first chapter and then give in. So this book is unrated. I'm not saying it's a shit book. Maybe I could read this book and just fall in love with the characters. Maybe this kind of storytelling is just, you know, I didn't realize, but this is actually exactly what I wanted, and I'd get through this end of this book and give it like 3.5, 4 stars, but there's just no chance of that ever happening. So wraps up my review of the first chapter and first 3 paragraphs of chapter 2 of Blackout and All Clear, thousands of pages. Or hundreds, over 1,000 pages of story I'm not going to read. So that's it for this one. Unrated book, another one, because this is unfinished. It's not really fair to give me this for me to give this one a rating. I will be doing, after episode 250, which is the next one, I will be doing a wrap-up of my experiment of reading all of the Hugo and Nebula Award winners, all the Hugo Award-winning books. I will do an episode about that reading project, which I started at the beginning of the summer in the spring, and finished up with reading this first chapter and first 3 paragraphs of this book. I'll do that in a few episodes' time, once we get through 250. Sorry about any audio problems on the previous episode where I reviewed... I know, I should have stuck the apology on that one. But there was, I had this thing with the microphone, but my headphones were in, and it was picking up the noise from the headphones microphone as well as the other microphone, and it was bad audio quality. And I'm very sorry, but not sorry enough to re-record it. So you can follow me. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. You can become my friends on goodreads.com and comment on this review there, on my review of Blackout. I will post that there. You can chat with other people on the SFBRP listener group. Suggestions for episode 250, probably a bit late now, but you can chat about books you want to see reviewed, how you got into science fiction, and lots of other topics that come up there with the SFBRP listener group. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every single email. And that's it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.